The mic for this little jewel. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, as I say, they were trying to get out of Brittany, and there was quite an exchange of fire, but we didn't suffer any particular damage from that account. However, unfortunately, due to a misappreciation of distance, one ship to another, and in regard to the distance off the beach that we were, it was thought that we ought to alter course. So after advising our people ahead, and don't forget by this time there's a great pall of gunfire smoke everywhere, so we didn't see much of it. We turned our 180 degrees only to find that one of our lead vessel hadn't altered. And so there was a very bad collision. But in point of fact, we nicked off our corner of our bow, and I think it was Capel's stern. So we both had to go into dry dock for a short while. And it was during that time that I had an opportunity, and my captain suggested to me, look, if you're interested in that girl, you better go and do something about it, because I think we're going to go home after we get out of the dry dock movement. By this time, we were in Plymouth.
Do I know that girl?
You certainly do.
That's Peggy.
That's right.
Well, when had you met her?
Well, I met her when we were preparing to come down for the landings, you see.
Yeah.
And so we'd met only a couple of times, because after our first go, we'd been sent back to Londonderry and on to Port Rush, where there were a very generous Irish family, well off, obviously, had turned over their house and grounds, tennis courts, and everything else, for Canadians that they might have from our ships, that they could have a bit of a rest from the endeavor in the channel. And so that's how we met. Anyhow, she was one of 12 girls, would you believe, who were in charge of the control station for the northwestern approaches. It was astounding, the amount of responsibility that was placed on those young women. And I must say, they did it extremely well. And moreover, had an enormous nightlife as well. I don't know how on earth they managed to stay awake, let alone anything else. But they're very well. Anyhow, I should add in passing also that... I'll stick my mind and I'll come back.
Anyway, your captain said if you're going to marry that girl.
So I dashed back to Belfast and proposed. Then we informed our respective parents in Canada, and my father was working in Washington at that time, and her parents in Shropshire, and we were subsequently married in Plymouth in an old chapel called the Stoke Damerel Parish, just outside the relatively just outside the dockyard gates. And
you spell it?
S-T-O-K-E, and Damerel is D-A-M-E-R-E-L, I think.
It's close enough.
Yeah. In anyway...
in Plymouth, yeah.
Yes, and we spent our honeymoon in the rubble. Believe me, it was all very bad to knock around. And as I say, we had 7 days, Plymouth Hoe and all the rest. And then we went back to our respective jobs. By this time, she was working in the cellars of the Belfast Castle, which they turned into a communication center, and I went back to see in Skeena. And almost a month later, we were in a terrible storm off Iceland. And Pat Russell, our captain, and I, we were very close. We were talking and... saying, you know, my word, it's good to be out here. At least we can stand it, because the ship can stand anything. We had been in previously, and we had dragged, and we'd managed to get away with it. But the volcanic ash bottom and our single line, center line capstan, whereby we could only use one anchor effectively at any time, made it such that we should either be alongside something or else not anchor if you can possibly avoid it, especially in the wintertime.
Went into Iceland, why?
Well, because it was so very rough outside, and the shore authority said that if we wished to come in, why then please do so. And our senior officer at the time, Captain Prentice, then took it upon himself to order our group into anchor.
So although Skeena would have preferred to stay at sea, she had to follow the senior officer in?
Oh yes, sure. And subsequently we did.
And Captain Prentice was in what?
Gosh, you know, I can't remember.
He was a four-ringer in a destroyer?
Yes, he was in... No, I don't recall.
That's all right. Anyway, you were ordered in, although you would have preferred to remain at sea, and you anchored, and you...
We subsequently grounded about 2.5 hours after we had anchored, and in what we thought was to be the safest spot, because there was a sort of equal distance to the shore, and because the wind was changing in direction, and its velocity was 100 knots.
It was a boat. I was up that fjord that night, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And were you? Well, anyhow, as I say, and we all know, it's all on record, it's a very sad occasion, and perhaps the most poignant thing was that we lost 17 of our comrades who, if they had been able to stay in the ship, they would have been able to have got ashore the next day after the storm had subsided by Beach's boy, as all the rest of us did. But they felt that they ought to take a shot at it, and they went over the side in Carly floats, and although we tried, every effort was made to hold the lines, we had a situation where it was so cold that oil and snow on the upper deck was forming a kind of slithery slush, and the lines, even though bent around stanchions, couldn't be held by the human hands. They just drawn out of them and off they went. That was the limit of our fortune. Anyway.
So there is Skeena aground, yes. And you are a survivor.
Yes, and indeed there was a chief yeoman, Kelly, rather funny actually. It was always something amusing, thank God. And he and I, we're quite good pals. And the pilot and the communicator are usually, well, in those days, I have a funny feeling I had communications as part of my bailiwick, which was quite frequent. In any case, we also jointly were responsible for the canteen. And so I, along with my friend, we got into the canteen. Well, there was a lot of water around, but it was not that bad. And we salvaged all of the money, which literally was pounds and pounds of coin. And of course, English coin is notoriously heavy. And so here we are, a lump of coin, and a great wad of notes. Well, we got it ashore. And in due course, as we sold it over, like Santa Claus with all the stuff, you know, I went into the Naffy with this packet of money because I knew that we owed a lot. And it was very interesting. A, they knew all about us, of course, which I thought was fascinating because we were supposed to be so secure. This was in Londonderry, by the way. After we'd been, I think I came back.
How did you get from Iceland to Londonderry?
Well, we had. I think I came back in a Cinnabon, if I recall.
You went from Iceland to Londonderry in a Cinnabon.
Yeah,
with
Chris Smith was. I don't know whether he was excellent.
With your pounds and pounds
that's
of
right.
English coins and wads
of
salt water notes.
Oh yeah, and so. Yeah, as I say,
so in Londonderry, you went to pay the Naffy.
Yeah.
That's spelled, Molly, N capital, all capitals, NAAFI.
Right. Navy, Army,
Air Force
Institute. Anyway, the Naffy man said, "Oh, it's quite all right. You don't owe us anything." And I said, "You've got to be kidding." He said, No. Consider all your bills paid. So I said, "My God, that's marvelous. Thank you very much." So then, what on earth? I knew damn well that we couldn't pocket it, quite clearly. So, I went back to the ship, and Pat Russell and I'm sure we must have discussed this, but in any case, what happened was, we had quite a goodly amount of money that we were able to subsequently have divided and provided to the families of the people who were lost, and so it was a kind of nice finale.
As what far would you say, 100 pounds?
Oh, gosh, it's more than that.
500 pounds?
Oh, I don't know. I just don't recall. But I, there were 17 families, and I don't know. It was an awful pot of money, but yeah. to me in those yeah. days, you know. But anyhow, it was a nice... It was a gesture. That's all it could have been, after all, for their loss. But one more amusing feature is we also had a large... undamaged stock of wardroom liquor, and so this was
which you didn't turn in.
No, it was shared amongst the survivors, and I remember I had a couple of bottles of some stuff called Krabby's Liqueur Whiskey, which I, when I subsequently got back to my wife on New Year's Day, having been back to Halifax for all the inquiries and so on that were required by the government and by the service. I subsequently went back to Londonderry in a ship called Seacliff with a man named Eric Harrington, who was the commanding officer, who was a very gung-ho fellow. I thought he was a terrific guy. And it was a rather fascinating thing in passing. Just as we were, the last couple of days before we were due to get into Londonderry, one of our ships, the name of which escaped me, got a contact, and indeed... damaged severely, a submarine, and between Seacliff and this other castle-class corvette, they sank it. And sure enough, I was a passenger, of course, and on the upper deck at the time, and on the bridge, and sure enough, she came to the surface, and everybody bailed out. And we got everyone. There were 52 from the ship's company. And
from the U-boat.
From the U-boat. And we got them on a large number of them in our ship. And indeed, the first lieutenant was in our ship, who turned out to be an Austrian. And he was only 21. And a very nice young fellow. And,
excuse me, where was this sinking?
Southwest of Ireland. Off the southwest coast of Ireland.
And you don't remember the U-boat number?
No.
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 All right.
Anyway...
How far southwest of Ireland?
Oh, I don't recall. We were only about 2.5 days out, so it wasn't that...
Not that far.
No.
All right,
It wasn't October at all. It was December.
Well...
December 44. And the interesting thing about this one was that first of all, nobody would speak. They were cowed. And all they wanted was their comb, my Coleman, yeah. And strangely enough, I was the only person who had any inkling of German in the officers or men in Seacliff. I'd had good old high school German in
Ottawa
at Lisgar Collegiate. And that was it. And we had a German-English equivalence handbook, and I was going through that as best I could, which was, I might add, very, very... inferior, that's not cool, I suppose. But the Austrian, he had a bit of English and a bit of German. Between the two of us, we managed to get some conversation going. The key to the whole situation was to find the SS man. And once we found him and got rid of him, segregated him, why, everybody warmed up and had a very jolly time.
So there was an SS man in the U-boat?
Every ship.
Because I know the Russians kept a commissar in each boat.
This guy was some sort of a technician by name, but in fact he was there to make certain that everybody towed the line. they weren't about to write letters or do anything. And Eric Harrington said, right, we're going to suffer a lot of it. So he put the whole issue down, the survivors, in the stoker's mess deck. And then, at very slow speed, with some considerable danger for the ship, I might add, tossed over a raft of depth charges set at shallop. And, of course, the ship shook considerably.
Yes.
And they thought they were being...
torpedoed.
Again. Yeah. And they were very unnerved by this. And they said, you know, our U-boat was like a salad. It was so mixed. Everything was all mucked up inside it because of the depth charges and so on. And they were very deeply upset about it. And then once, as I say, we got rid of the SS man, why, everything smiled. And by the time...
By the way, how did you find the SS man?
Well, the first lieutenant did. The first lieutenant told me. And I told Eric Harrington.
And so Eric Harrington, the captain, just jerked this fellow away into solitary.
That's right.
And
from there on in, everything was very much from roses.
And what effect did Eric Harrington's dropping his own depth charges have?
Oh, I think that also on Eric.
It frightened them,
considerably. Oh, yeah. I mean, why not? And they've been living in their tin fish for some time, and it was by no means a comfortable situation to have to go in and drink once.
Well, that's very interesting.
So, now, I'll just finish this, and then I regret I must call this one. When we got them ashore in the tail of the bank, you know.
Tail of the bank, yeah.
Greenock,
yeah.
And they were lined up on the jetty to be marched off to concentration camp, and they gave three cheers for our ship. You know, this is a bit strange. It just shows me, you know. They were happy as mudlarks to be out of it, frankly, by this time.
Yes. Now, you were a passenger in this ship.
Yes, I was.
And where did you go from there?
From there I went back to Londonderry, and then I went on survivor's leave, and I had a month's leave there, and that subsequently I had my normal leave. So I was actually unemployed for 2 months.
In Londonderry?
In Londonderry, yeah.
And Peggy was there?
She was.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, it was great. It was the finest time, my son.
Yes.
And so subsequently, Peggy, after a great deal of fascinating catch-22 situations with bureaucracies, both in the RN and the Canadian government, to do with who was going to give the first approval, why, Peggy came out in a troop ship along with some 1,170 other war brides in April of 45, and I remained at sea in Gatineau and subsequently in Ottawa trooping. We did this trooping business from Greenock to Halifax.
Yeah, I want to get this straight now. You left, you're in Londonderry on survivor's leave, and then you joined the...
Gatineau. Yeah.
And
oh, yes, I forgot. We did the relief of the Channel Islands. We were down in that area for us.
And what year are we up to now?
This is still...
We're after the invasion of France. We're into 1945.
Oh, yes, no, that's wrong. In 45, yes, almost at once. It was, it's about March or April 45. And,
so in March or
now
April 45?
Gatineau. No, January 45. So that's not end of January, it must have been, because you see, I think there's some mistakes in these dates, a little bit. Because in any case, we started this, we went back to convoy work, and we...
Gatineau went back to convoy
that's
work.
That's right.
Yeah.
And subsequently, in after D-Day, because I was at sea for both D-Day and VJ Day, in both either Gatineau or Ottawa, subsequently. And, that's right. In Gatineau, I was excellent seaman, one of the finest seamen I've ever met, and the ship handler, Jeffrey Davidson, who's retired, G.H. Davidson, and I served
him. Jeff Huntley Davidson?
Yeah, and I served him as in both Gatineau and as XO.
And he was captain?
Yeah.
Because he was Andy Fulton's term lieutenant,
is
and Roy Rhodes.
Oh, for God's sake. Anyway, we had served in strange and nefarious ways. But in Ottawa, we got into the business of trooping. What happened?
Wait a minute. What happened to Gatineau?
Oh, when Gatineau... P.D. Budge was Captain Gatineau, I think. And there was a transfer between... in July, I guess, when we both, Davidson and I... came from Gatineau to Ottawa, and the then CO of Ottawa, I guess that was with P.D. Budge, and he departed somewhere else, and we took on, at that time, I have a funny feeling that was in Halifax. However, the point of this area of activity was that by this time, both Gatineau and Ottawa had both served million miles plus in the Mediterranean as RM ships, Foxhound and, gosh, I forgot the other one. But by the time we got to them, these ships were getting pretty thin.
Yeah.
And so they said, right, the government wants to get everybody home from England, and they've got troop ships.
And now VE Day has passed.
Oh, yes, that was April the 8th.
So in Gatineau and then in Ottawa, you were doing
this
troop convoys.
That's right.
Between where and where?
Greenock and Halifax.
You're taking troops home.
At home, that's right.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Yeah. So we figured we could beat the Mauritania, no, the Aquitania. We figured we could beat the Aquitania by half a day. And what we did was, I wanted to...
No, you were carrying troops.
Carrying
you weren't
troops.
Escorting the...
We were carrying troops.
Oh.
And we took all the heavy stuff out. All the ammunition was out. The electrics were disconnected. We reduced the ship's company seamen to 12.
Yes.
And we had steaming crews and victualling crews. And we carried up to 45 officers. And we had something in the order of about 250 men. And that was where we first instituted cafeteria messing in the RCM.
Yes, you'd have to.
And
so you went back in Gatineau in Ottawa. You were taking troops home.
That's right.
After
now,
VE
Ottawa,
Day and then after VJ Day.
Yeah, I'm not
now,
too
you
sure
never saw
January,
any.
Gatineau.
You never saw any action in either of
those
ships.
Oh no! This was a.
Okay.
It was strictly a situation to get people home. I didn't see any action.
Well,
after that, until I got out to Korea in 1951.
Well, now, this is a good place to cut off, Peter, because you're tired, and it was good of you to come this afternoon.
No,
I know you've had a busy week past, and you've got a busy week ahead of you, and we've got a good cut-off point now, because you're back in Halifax, and when we pick the tape up again, it'll be between the years 1945 and 1950, and then your time in Korea.
Right.
Right?
Done. With pleasure.
Thank you. Let the tape show that we are shaking hands.
Double. Excellent.